There's a movie opening in St. Louis next Friday, April 10th, called Merchants of Doubt, which I am really looking forward to seeing. It is about the industry of creating doubt, quite often about things that are scientifically accepted, but they muddy the water so much. These pundits and fake scientists lie about it and muddy the water so much that they create doubt about climate change or vaccines or so many other things. And they're really good at it. Imagine this scenario. Sunday night, the Cards and the Cubs open up the baseball season in Chicago. Let's say the Cardinals win that game 6-1. And the next day you turned on the TV and there was a guy from the Institute for Baseball Statistics who was telling you that the Cubs won the game 4-3. And he kept saying that over and over and over again. And he kept appearing on different media outlets and telling you about the Cubs' great victory that night. What you didn't know was that the Institute for Baseball Statistics was actually something that was made up as a pro-Cubs organization. Well, Cardinal fans would never fall for that, of course. But you fall for that sort of nonsense all the time about all sorts of issues. And Robert Kenner is the man who has made this movie, Merchants of Doubt, which delves into exactly that. And I'm happy to have him joining me here today on the Big 550. Hi, Robert. How are you?
I'm good, Paul. I love that. The Baseball Institute for Baseball Statistics.
Yeah.
You know, in actuality, these guys, they figure out how to not quite lie, but at the same time, you know, like for 50 years, they were able to create doubt on whether tobacco caused cancer. They wouldn't say it doesn't cause cancer, because that is an out-and-out lie, but they could, in effect, say, we need more studies. The science isn't good enough.
Yeah.
It was everything to create doubt and delay, and they did it, whether it was with tobacco or asbestos or DDT or acid rain or, you know, climate. It just went on and on, and it's the same sort of playbook that goes from one product to the next.
Now, here's the frustrating thing for me, because I talk about these things all the time and how, you know, it's unfair and unbalanced. They're actually, you can't have one person from each side of an issue come on there and debate it, because, for instance, with climate change, it's not one versus one. It's not a 50-50 proposition. John Oliver did a great thing early on in the run of his show,
yeah,
where he had a so-called debate about this. And he said, well, we want to have it actually represent the proportionality of the scientists who believe one thing or another. So here are 98 who say, yes, climate change is made by man and is a problem. And here are the other two who aren't. Now we can have a debate. It's 98-2. That's part of the problem. It's that the media allows the false equivalency, isn't it?
That's exactly. I mean, listen, it's a great thing that the media likes to represent two sides. That's a real virtue. The problem is when there aren't two sides. Again, you know, tobacco wanted to have a debate on whether it caused cancer, even though they knew their product caused cancer, but they wanted to debate for as long as possible. And, you know, they got 50 years out of it, and those people who learn their craft in tobacco have figured out all you have to do is stall and keep representing it as if there's really a debate, and the media fell for it. You know, to talk whether the earth is round and the earth is flat, we don't need two sides, because at some point it becomes accepted science.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the media, and I'm not only talking Fox News, I'm talking CBS and New York Times, though I think that is starting to change, and they're saying now these guys who are hired PR agents shouldn't be representing themselves on television as scientific experts. That was really a weakness of the media to be presenting them that way, and that is starting to change.
Yeah, you would think with the internet, which, by the way, spreads a lot of this false information, you can actually dig in and find out. Years ago, I was offered an opportunity to talk to somebody from the Center for Consumer Freedom, an organization I know you're familiar with because you made the movie Food, Inc. Who is the Center for Consumer Freedom?
Paul, that is Richard Berman, funded by fast food companies, and that's what got me interested in this movie, actually. I was at a hearing when I was making Food Inc. on whether we should label cloned meat, and people got up and said, you know, it would be too much of a burden on the consumer to give them that kind of information. I looked into it, and it was groups like Citizens for Consumer Freedom that are out there trying to do everything to stop you from knowing what's in your food. And, you know, that's just, it's sort of this Orwellian world. They have names that are the exact opposite of what they're looking to do. And by the way, Richard Berman, when he represented alcohol, attacked mothers against drunk driving, and when he attacked big industrial ag, attacked the Humane Society, and was just recently recorded at an energy conference saying to these representatives, you can either lose pretty or you can pay me the big bucks and we'll win ugly because I will attack these people. I'll go on the offensive. It doesn't matter. I'll do anything to win.
And in many cases, when you say Richard Berman, sometimes it is one guy. That's the entire organization they're supposedly representing. It's one person who's very good at the PR machine aspect of this.
And he might have 100 different, you know, Citizens for or Freedom organizations that he has that have a name, and they're doing the exact opposite. We have a story about Citizens for Fire Safety, and it had a bunch of kids with a little heart, you know, I love safety. And it was the three largest chemical companies that were set up that wasn't Citizens. It was, you know, but they're pretending to be something other than what they are.
Let me ask you about who is behind some of the others that I think you highlight in the movie. Climate Depot. What's that?
Yeah. Well, they're all, you know, all these organizations that are out there to sort of, you know, keep spreading and creating this doubt. You know, I think one of the people who was, I'm going to skip for a second, but to Citizens for Fire Safety, you know, there was a man, Peter Sparber, who got us, it was defending tobacco. He said, if you can do tobacco, you can do anything. And he, at one point, they were trying, tobacco had a problem because of house fires, and people wanted to institute this slow-burning cigarette, and that would cost them a lot of money.
Yep.
So they went around and said, it's not cigarettes that cause house fires, it's couches that cause house fires. And he got them to put these flame retardants in these couches, and became a law. So all those tags you see, it was because of tobacco saying it's not our product, it's the furniture that causes these problems. And what happened was, it turns out the flame retardants don't prevent fires, but they cause cancer. And so for 30, 40 years, they made it a law, we have to have these things in our furniture, in our baby clothing. And it was pretty amazing. And meanwhile, that was Citizens for Fire Safety that helped fight for this law.
So are these people not only good at public relations, but great at lobbying as well?
Yeah, I mean, they create the cover, the public relation. Obviously, they then, you know, the lobbying is sort of a little more above board because we know it's, you know, it's Philip Morris or, you know, it's tobacco companies lobbying. But they have the cover of these false studies or, you know, citizen groups. You know, like one tobacco executive said, this was a man who was now dying of cancer, so he was telling how he did his trips. He said, we would get people out to the airport to say our freedom's being taken away because we don't have the right to smoke on airlines. You know, they're taking our freedom away.
Yeah.
So they changed the subject to make it about something other than what it really is about, which is selling what their product is.
And we're seeing exactly that. We're seeing the use of that word exactly now in the Religious Freedoms Restoration Act. It's really, we're against gay marriage, but if we call it religious freedom, we can change the dialogue, right?
It's freedom. It's citizen. It's amazing how the same words keep coming up. Or jobs, you know, we're fighting to keep coal jobs because, you know, we want to live like those towns in West Virginia, which are the poorest towns in the United States.
Right.
You know, we can't, you know, don't lose these jobs when we could create higher, you know. And what's wonderful in the film is there are many great examples of Republicans who are saying this is our issue. You know, we need to go talk about some of these issues. They're ours. We shouldn't let the Democrats take it, but, you know, we're out to conserve. You know, they're George Shultz, who was Reagan's Secretary of State, said the Republican Party is the party of the environment. Nixon started it. Reagan, Nixon started the EPA, the Clean Water Act. Reagan put through an international treaty on ozone, and George H.W. Did action on acid rain. So there's a long tradition, but all of a sudden it's been sort of preempted by the Koch brothers and people sort of fighting for their own corporate interest and sort of, I think, fooling a large group of people, yeah, thinking that their rights are being taken away, the when that's not what it's about at all.
The Koch brothers have their PAC and their groups like Americans for Prosperity.
Yeah.
There are other groups like the Save Our Species Alliance, which you have in the movie, which opposes the Endangered Species Act because it's sponsored by the American Forest Resource Council.
Right. Paul, you're good.
Well, I've done some research on what this is, and I'm so looking forward to seeing the movie and seeing you talking to these people, but that's where the next question comes up. When you go in and you talk to them, they're so smooth and they're so smarmy. Did you have to steel yourself against what you knew they were going to say so you could undercut their claims?
Well, you know what? I was going to find out what they thought and what they did, and I was very appreciative. As a filmmaker, I'm really appreciative when people let me in. There are some jaw-dropping pieces in the film. I met a man named Mark Morano, who is really good at what he does. He's very charming, very funny, very smart, and very successful. And I asked him what he did, and he said, well, you know, I guess you could call me an environmental journalist, though that's going to make people puke. He said, I play a scientist on television. And he's on TV all the time. And I said, so what, you know, what's your job? He said, my job is to create, you know, delay action. My job's the easy job. All I have to do is stop things from happening. And he was very honest. And, you know, I said, what's different about you, Mark, is that you attack people personally. And he said, I'm so glad you asked me, because that's where I get my great pleasure. So, first of all, they're all different. I don't mean to say every one of them acts out of this. You know, they all have their own different reasons for doing what they do. But it was pretty great being able to hear about this world from the people in the world, some of whom talked to me. Peter Sparber, when I tried to get him, the man who was responsible for putting the flame retardants in the couches, I asked him to be in the film. And he, I was surprised he called me back because he hasn't responded to any reporters for decades. But I explained what we were doing, and I said, it's not only about tobacco or flame retardants, we go on to talk about climate as well. And he said, you could take James Hansen, the world's leading climate scientist, and I could take a garbage man, and I could get America to believe the garbage man knows more about science. And you get goosebumps. But I appreciate when people talk to you and tell you how they do what they do. At least we can have insight to know how to respond.
It's the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris talking with Robert Kenner about his documentary Merchants of Doubt, which opens in St. Louis a week from tomorrow on April 10th. I want to talk about the personal attacks for just a moment, because that really is an interesting aspect to me. People who don't answer the question that you're asking them about the science or the facts or the things that have evidence behind them, but make it a personal battle and really go after some of these people. Did you talk to James Hansen, who is the NASA climatologist, who himself was a victim of some of these attacks, and other people who were on the other end of that?
Yeah, I did. James Hansen, it's funny, he has very little interest in even discussing how he might have been attacked, but there are a number, and he's been probably attacked unmercifully. He just really wants to do with science, as almost all these scientists do. Though we talked to Ben Santer, whose house, he was the first one who said there's a sort of, it looks like there could be human influence on affecting climate. He said that in 95. And his life was turned upside down by that one statement in the international IPCC report, which was done by thousands of scientists around the world. And his house was, you know, attacked. He got thousands or hundreds of hate emails, as did Catherine Hayhoe, a Baptist scientist from Texas, as did Michael Mann. They've just, and they start to read some of these emails, and they're just jaw-droppingly horrific and unbelievable that here are these people doing their science who had no idea these attacks would be coming. They didn't understand that they were in the, you know, they, for them, they're scientists doing their work. But as Stan Glantz, a tobacco scientist who saw this, you know, for many years before the climate scientists saw it, which is if you're doing something that's inconvenient to certain companies, they're going to then deflect the argument and make you the target.
I talked to Michael Mann when he came out with his book, divulging some of the things that he went through, and it was a real horror show for a guy who all he was trying to do was the job a scientist is supposed to do, which is follow the evidence to a conclusion and then share it with the world.
And Michael, the irony of Michael with the hockey stick was he had done like all this research and didn't even bother to do the last 100 years, which showed the hockey stick. And his editor said, why don't you follow it all the way through? And that's when they came to that surprising conclusion. It wasn't what he even set out to show. And yet, if you do something, you know, these are hardworking, honest people who don't have an agenda, who are not, you know, they're not 10,000 scientists saying, hey, how can we fool the world into thinking this is real? It would be quite the conspiracy. That's not how it works. And these are just hardworking people that are out there, and all of a sudden they're now being attacked because that's the best way of creating doubt and delay.
The hockey stick is the shape of the graph of temperatures on Earth. The blade of the hockey stick is the part that goes up towards the end in the last 100 years. That's what Robert and Michael Mann are referring to, and they call it that. So, why don't the scientists do a better job of telling their story? Why, when they go on TV, are they not hiring people who can make their case better in the public eye?
Well, I think that's an interesting question. I think, you know, as I sort of dug deep into this world, that it's not the scientist's job. You know, I'm really thankful there's scientists out there who have been able to figure out what's happening to our planet or what happens to our lungs or what happens if we put these chemicals in our couches, these flame retardants. And that they, you know, they're not great television personalities. We show James Hansen being very awkward during his interviews, and he's become a spokesman for this not by choice, frankly.
But why doesn't NASA have somebody who they have in their public relations wing who James Hansen sits down with and explains it all to, and then they go out and do it? I mean, the other side is hiring professional spokespeople to go out and try to spin this their way. Why doesn't the scientific community, in many of these cases, not just about climate change, but, you know, vaccines, which is, again, settled science, but we're having an argument about it for no reason other than, you know, a Playboy playmate talked about it and made it famous.
Right.
You know, I mean, that sort of nonsense goes on all the time. So why isn't the scientific side getting professional spokespeople to do the appearances on CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, and every other outlet?
Right. I think, you know, on some levels, they thought that the facts would win out. They didn't realize what they were up against. You know, it didn't occur to them that people wouldn't listen to accepted science. They didn't realize that, you know, you can have 98% of scientists thinking one thing and the other 2%, who, by the way, are receiving millions of dollars. Willie Soon, it was a front page New York Times article, he's one of the few climate scientists who thinks man is not creating, changing the climate.
Yeah.
Turns out it's getting $1.3 million from different energy companies and referring to his scientific research as deliverables to those energy companies.
Mm.
But I think that it didn't occur to these scientists. I mean, first of all, they only think about science. You know, I interviewed James Hansen, and the second we were finished, he was back working on his paper. Hardly said goodbye, and he went right back to work. So in their brains, they're just wanting to do science, frankly. They're up against great PR people. So, but your question is a good one. You know, I think that they're now people trying to help, train the scientists, who I don't think they're going to be the ones, but I guess it's my job. I think it's the job of the media to come out and really sort of vet who are the people that are debating. You know, there is a good debate to do, to talk about what we should do about climate, but there's not a good debate whether it's happening or not.
Last thing I want to ask you about is if you would tell my audience the story of a man by the name of Bob Inglis.
Bob is a wonderful human being. He was a congressman, a Republican congressman, from the reddest, district in the reddest state in South Carolina. And he, you know, had doubted climate change, because he said if Al Gore thought it was true, he must have thought it was wrong. Bob's a very smart gentleman. I think he graduated top in his class from Duke. And he went to the Antarctic and he met with numbers of scientists and he began to realize these are not people who have an axe to grind. They're hardworking scientists and he was very moved by them. Bob is a man of great faith and he realized that these people were also one or two of them were of, you know, of faith and he really appreciated them, and he also realized he was going to lose his kids' votes if he didn't start thinking about this issue. And he decided he could go back and change his constituents in South Carolina. Well, he was wrong about that. He got voted out of office. The Kochs had backed him for, I think, 5 or 6 elections, and then they backed his opponent in the Republican primary. But Bob is now working to help change the Republican Party to say this is our issue. We need to go at it. And it shouldn't be a liberal issue. It should be a conservative issue. And Bob is the one who ends our film, and I think he's a really inspirational human being. Because it's hard for anyone to change, whether you're a liberal or a conservative. It's hard to change, and it's hard to see the world differently. And Bob's a real American hero in my mind.
The movie is called Merchants of Doubt. It opens Friday, April 10th here in St. Louis. I hope it has a run of a couple of weeks. And then will it be available streaming soon thereafter?
Sony's putting it out, and then it'll have a life on the... you know, I'm sure in Amazon and wherever else. I think it's going to be on Stars and a few different places, and then it'll, you know, go broad, and hopefully people will get to see it.
I really do hope a lot of people get to see it so that they can see that their truth that they believe is not the truth that is true. It's a movie I'm looking forward to seeing myself. It's called Merchants of Doubt. This is the director, Robert Kenner. Thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thank you so much, Paul. I'm going to look into the Institute of Baseball Statistics to make sure the Cardinals don't get cheated here.
Yeah, they are liars.
Okay. Thank you very much, Paul.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.